informative overview of what's happening across the country. Following that, we turn to Mimber, a program that shares insightful excerpts from the sermons and talks of prominent Islamic scholars, covering themes such as ethics, theology, Quranic exegesis, Islamic history, and occasionally contemporary social and political matters. Mimber offers listeners a rich space of contemplation and learning. Then we'll join the panel in Quran Quest, a roundtable discussion addressing your questions about the Holy Quran. With clarity and care, our panelists respond to inquiries received via phone and online platforms, offering guidance and resolving uncertainties about the meanings and messages of this sacred book. Up next, Spring of Truth, we invite you to stay with us.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله dear audience welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from iRib English Radio. This is Zainab Musavi and what we do in this program is to listen to certain viewpoints of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi who was the great founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran and then try to shed light and talk about some of these beautiful viewpoints. Well, about the conspiracy of America and Israel, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh says, the United States, with its imperialist policies, seeks to dominate and exploit Muslim countries for its own interests. Well, Imam Khomeini's statement reflects a critical perspective on the U.S. Foreign policy, viewing it as imperialist and exploitative, especially towards Muslim nations. And this critique can be contextualized within the broader Islamic teachings that emphasize justice and opposition to the oppressor. Islam condemns imperialism and oppression, and it advocates for the independence and dignity of Muslim nations. The Holy Book of Quran emphasizes justice and the prohibition of tyranny, and says, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim," and do not let the hatred of a people prevent you from be just, that is nearer to piety. Surah Al-Ma'idah, verse number 8. You see, this verse underscores the importance of justice, which imperialist policies often violate through exploitation and domination. And Imam Khomeini's critique aligns with the Shia principle that foreign interference, especially when it leads to the subjugation of Muslim countries, is morally wrong. His reference to U.S. policies as seeking to dominate and exploit underscores the perception that Western powers prioritize their interests over justice and well-being of the Muslim people. Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi sallallahu alayhi salli ala Narrations condemn the oppression and support resistance against unjust rulers. The Prophet ﷺ said, help your brother, whether he is an oppressor or oppressed. And when he was asked about how to help an oppressor, he said, by preventing him from oppressing others. This emphasizes that standing against oppression and unjust dominance is very important, and we must try to change the situations even when there is a person who does the oppression. And in essence, Imam Khomeini's statement resonates with principles that oppose the imperialism and support justice and resistance against exploitations. I really hope that you have enjoyed listening to us, and until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
There was a spring of truth, a selection of Imam Khomeini's viewpoints.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. English Radio.
The 8-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
In June of this year, as sirens wailed over Tehran and Israeli bombs rained on civilian neighborhoods, another war was underway. A quieter, more insidious war. It wasn't fought with F-35s, bombs, or drones, but with headlines, hashtags, and carefully crafted narratives by a chorus of Persian-speaking media outlets operating thousands of miles from the battlefield. A media war, coming from satellite signals and polished news studios in London and Washington. In this episode, Iran Today examines how some of the most prominent Persian language outlets abroad, including Iran International, BBC Persian, and Manoto, became not observers of conflict, but participants. They speak Persian. They speak the language of our people. They claim to investigate and to inform. But in the most critical moment of modern Iranian history, as Israel struck not just military and nuclear sites, but homes, hospitals, even a prison filled with civilians, what these networks delivered wasn't journalism, it was propaganda. As the war raged on, a disturbing pattern emerged. These media channels that branded themselves as independent Persian voices were not condemning the attacks. Instead, they echoed the talking points of the very regime launching them, Israel. For example, after one of the most shocking attacks in which the regime struck Evin prison, they ran a segment not on the dozens of children and visitors killed, but on the so-called symbolism of targeting a state institution. The reports chose to emphasize administrative missteps, bearing the lead under layers of political deflection. Their analysts avoided using the word war crime. They did not name the children. They did not mourn the innocent. Instead, they asked why the prisoners weren't released beforehand. One guess even implied Iran had staged the prison bombing itself, parroting the Israeli line almost verbatim. The language used by the media can reveal much about their agenda, explains Dr. Leila Vesali, a communication studies expert and a faculty member at Allame Tabatabai University.
You can learn a lot just by looking at the words, phrases, headlines, and overall the language that the media uses. You don't necessarily need a leaked document to understand a media outlet's agenda or bias. Take this for example. When Israel, without any provocation, attacks Iran while it's in the middle of negotiations with the US, killing hundreds of civilians, including women and children, and bombing hospitals and civilian centers, networks like BBC Persian and Iran International avoid using the word crime to describe what Israel has done in Iran. That says a lot. It shows that these outlets are aligned with that regime and don't want to tarnish its image in the eyes of their audience.
While Israel was killing Iranian civilians, these media redirected the focus to images of long lines at gas stations and footage of empty grocery shelves. The message wasn't about resilience or unity or mourning at wartime. It was about chaos, collapse, and failure. Dr. Vesali said these outlets not only fail to report the full truth, but also engage in psychological warfare.
Another key point is the psychological warfare these networks, BBC Persian, Iran International, and other foreign-based Farsi language channels, waged against the Iranian people during the war. They pumped out false reports, claiming store shelves were empty, bakeries had no flour, and famine was imminent. These were classic tools of psychological warfare, the same playbook they used in Syria, and it worked there. But in Iran, thanks to the intelligence and resilience of the people, it failed. In Syria, they started by spreading rumors that Bashar al-Assad had fled. Then they falsely claimed the Syrian army had collapsed. Eventually, those rumors became reality. The army did collapse, and the president fled. These media outlets don't just report events, they manufacture them. They float the rumors of what they want to happen, amplify them, and keep at it until those rumors become reality.
These channels are not Iranian media. They are not the voices of the people. They are well-funded platforms licensed in London and Washington, scripted in Tel Aviv. And in this war, they didn't just veil the truth, they betrayed it. During the war, their masks fell away. Even numerous opposition groups outside the country began calling for a boycott of TV channels like Iran International.
Mr. Morteza Simyari, a journalist and a media activist. He told us that media outlets like Iran International have crossed all professional lines.
Let's be clear. A network that routinely interviews members and spokespersons of terrorist groups is violating every principle of ethical journalism. Have you ever seen CNN or Fox News interview a spokesperson for Daesh? Of course not. But with Iran International, this has become totally routine. And many of the staff at this network either used to be or still are members of terrorist organizations like Komala, Pejak, or the MEK. If the law meant anything in this case, Ofcom, the UK's media regulator, would have shut down their broadcasts long ago. But let's be honest, that's unlikely to happen. When a network's funding, logistics, and even its editorial direction are backed by intelligence services like Mossad and the CIA, you can't really expect meaningful oversight. After all, hacked internal documents reveal that one of their journalists, Mojtaba Pour Mohsen, was in daily contact with a Mossad officer in Tel Aviv to coordinate his reports. Still, we shouldn't remain silent. We need to raise our voices loudly against the global community's indifference to this network, which effectively serves as the spokesperson for terrorist groups and for the terrorist regime of Israel.
Soon after the breakout of the war came the spin. These networks, particularly Iran International, didn't just misreport. They distorted, they diverted, they normalized the unthinkable. Instead of asking why Israeli jets targeted Iran's civilian buildings, they asked why Iran didn't turn off its nuclear reactors. Instead of mourning the innocent, they speculated gleefully about missing Iranian commanders and collapsed military morale, stories that turned out to be false. Nowhere in these broadcasts was there mention of Geneva Conventions violated flagrantly by the Israeli regime. Iran International even gave Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a primetime platform, uninterrupted, unchallenged, where he accused Iran of targeting schools and civilians, while his own forces were doing just that. The network made no attempt to verify his claims or offer counterpoints.
Mr. Mohammad Lesani, a media expert located in Tehran, he pointed out the channel's close ties to Israeli intelligence.
And audit as insignificant. Do you think that's true?
It's important to note that the war the West and Israel have launched against Iran is a hybrid war in which military confrontation is only one component. At the same time, they have waged a serious media war against our country, an extensive media propaganda campaign that, on the one hand, amplifies their own power and on the other diminishes the capabilities of their opponent, that is Iran. The damage they inflict is exaggerated to appear catastrophic, while the damage they suffer is downplayed. However, in the case of the conflict with Iran, media outlets like CNN are now questioning the narrative created by the Trump administration, which has greatly angered Trump. There is no doubt that as time passes and more information leaks out, we will learn more about Iran's strike on Al Udeid base, and this media propaganda will no longer be useful for the U.S. president. The pressure on Trump will only continue to increase.
Hours after the AP report, the Pentagon reluctantly confirmed, yes, a ballistic missile struck the dome. The 379th Air Expeditionary Wing had once proudly announced its installation. Now satellite photos showed the dome vaporized and adjacent facilities damaged. Even Iran International, a London-based satellite outlet known for its opposition to Tehran, confirmed the hit, sourcing their own satellite provider. The message was becoming clearer. This wasn't a warning shot. This was a surgical strike on the communications heart of America's regional war machine. Hamid Reza Kazemi, a Tehran-based analyst of West Asian Affairs, commented on Iran International's coverage of the Al Udeid incident, suggesting the outlet had its own political motives in highlighting the story.
One interesting thing was that Iran International, with a track record of downplaying Iran strikes, this time, actually for the first time, it actually confirmed that Iran had struck the base and caused damage. Why do you think there was such a, somehow a shift of narrative this time?
Regarding Iran International, we know well that the network's anti-Iranian policies are shaped in Tel Aviv. Its media line is dictated from there. Its VOA, the Voice of America, is under the direct oversight of the US State Department, and the BBC operates under the British Foreign Office. Iran International is managed and directed by the Israelis. When Donald Trump claimed that the US had dealt a heavy blow to Iran and that Iran's response was weak, he was essentially trying to avoid a full-scale war with Iran and quickly bring the issue to a close. But when Iran International reports that Iran delivered a significant strike on the U.S. Al Udeid base, it challenges the American narrative with the clear aim of dragging the U.S. back into conflict with Iran. The report from this network is, in fact, a tool to increase pressure on Trump, a media game designed by the Israeli regime and executed by its media arm, Iran International.
To understand the significance of this operation, you must understand what Al-Odeh truly represents. This isn't just a military outpost. This is the nerve center of U.S. power projection in West Asia.
Set up in 1996, spread across 60 acres of desert, Al-Odeh is the forward headquarters of CENTCOM, directing operations from Egypt to Kazakhstan. It's home to 10,000 troops, the U.S. Air Force, the U.K. Royal Air Force, and the Qatar Emiri Air Force. Earlier this year, The Hill called it a critical component of U.S. force projection, noting that Qatar has spent over $8 billion upgrading the base. Its long runways and fortified command systems were supposed to ensure dominance, not vulnerability. Dr. Ghorbani offered deeper insight into the strategic importance of Al-Odeh Air Base, emphasizing its role in regional military dynamics.
Out of all the U.S. outposts bordering Iran, why did Iran choose to target Al-Odeh Air Base in Qatar in retaliation to the U.S. assault on its nuclear facilities?
There are several U.S. military bases around us, but perhaps none is as strategically important as the Al-Odeh Air Base in Qatar. This base is used for a wide range of purposes, launching fighter jets, overhauling aircraft, leading CENTCOM operations, and conducting signals, intelligence, and surveillance. The Americans rely heavily on this base for their operations in West Asia. They even used it to support the Zionist regime during the recent 12-day imposed war on Iran. Overall, since the U.S. established a serious presence in West Asia, they have placed special focus on the Al-Odeh base and have made massive investments there with the help of Qatar.
It's also CENTCOM's key air defense coordination center, syncing radar and satellite systems from Saudi Arabia to the Mediterranean, playing a vital role in missile interceptions. So when Iran fired those missiles, it didn't aim at a symbolic outpost. It struck at the operational brain, the nervous system of U.S. command infrastructure in the region.
What is the importance and significance of Al-Odeh Air Base in Qatar?
To understand the military significance of the Al-Odeh Air Base, we need to recognize the structure of the U.S. military command. The U.S. military has several command structures, and in our region, the primary operational command is CENTCOM, U.S. Central Command, which is headquartered in Florida. CENTCOM's ground operations are commanded from Kuwait, its national operations from Bahrain, and its air operations from Al-Odeh in Qatar. In other words, all U.S. air operations from Palestine to Afghanistan are commanded from this base. Even in the recent U.S. strike on Iran, the operation was directed from Al-Odeh. This base has another critical function, satellite intelligence gathering. During the 12-day war, it was also used to refuel Israeli fighter jets.
We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news headlines. Tehran Times. Pezeshkian: Iran will never bow to pressure, stands firm on legal nuclear rights. Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian has reaffirmed Iran's unwavering commitment to international law while stressing that Tehran will not yield to coercion or tolerate the denial of its legal rights, particularly in the context of its peaceful nuclear program. Speaking in a phone call with Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan on Saturday, President Pezeshkian underlined the transparency of Iran's nuclear activities and reiterated the Islamic Republic's long-standing cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency. Iran has nothing to hide. Our nuclear program has always been peaceful and is fully supervised by the IAEA, he stated. However, we categorically reject any attempts to exert pressure or strip the Iranian nation of its legal entitlements. Mehr News. U.S. Defense Department copies Iranian Kamikaze drone. The United States has copied and unveiled its own version of Iranian Shahed 136 loitering munition in a push to expand affordable air power operations for modern battlefields, named LUCAS, that is an abbreviation for low-cost, uncrewed combat attack system. The Kamikaze drone was unveiled during a visit by the Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth on July 16th to an exhibition of multi-domain autonomous systems in the Pentagon. The unveiling of LUCAS comes amid growing interest in affordable, expendable drones capable of complementing traditional air power. Iran's Shahed series drones have drawn global attention, according to the U.S. media reports. National Security Journal. Yes, Iran did hit Israel with missiles. Iran's recent missiles barrage against Israel served as a stark cautionary tale, demonstrating that even the world's most sophisticated multi-layered air defenses can be penetrated. According to a Wall Street Journal analysis, Iran successfully exploited gaps in Israel's vaunted systems, with a percentage of missiles slipping through doubling over the course of the 12-day conflict. This revelation about the vulnerability of systems like Arrow offers crucial lessons for the United States as the Trump administration pushes forward with its own ambitious Golden Dome National Missile Defense Shield. NBC News. New U.S. assessment finds American strikes destroyed only one of three Iranian nuclear sites. President Donald Trump rejected a military plan for more comprehensive strikes on Iran's nuclear program that would have lasted weeks, NBC News has also learned. One of the three nuclear enrichment sites in Iran struck by the United States last month was mostly destroyed, setting work there back significantly. But the two others were not as badly damaged and may have been degraded only to a point where nuclear enrichment could resume in the next several months if Iran wants it to. According to a recent U.S. assessment of the destruction caused by the military operation, five current and former U.S. officials familiar with the assessment told NBC News. The assessment, part of Trump's administration's ongoing efforts to determine the status of Iran's nuclear program since the facilities were struck, was briefed to some U.S. lawmakers, Defense Department officials, and allied countries in recent days, four of those people said. NBC News has also learned that U.S. Central Command had developed a much more comprehensive plan to strike Iran that would have involved hitting three additional sites in an operation that would have stretched for several weeks instead of a single night, according to a current U.S. official and two former U.S. officials. President Donald Trump was briefed on that plan, but it was rejected because it was at odds with his foreign policy instincts to extract the United States from conflicts abroad, not dig deeper into them, as well as the possibility of a high number of casualties on both sides, one of the current officials and one of the former officials said. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative.
Operation Annunciation of Victory was more than a military maneuver. It was a recalibration of region's power dynamics. At the strategic level, the rules had changed. Geography could no longer shield U.S. interests. Media spin could no longer hide the damage, and classical deterrence had failed. What's more, Tehran gave advance notice 12 hours for U.S. forces to evacuate the base, and Washington took that warning seriously. Personnel, aircraft, and equipment were rapidly moved out to Saudi Arabia. According to The Guardian, nearly 30 Patriot interceptors were fired to defend the base. Dan King, U.S. Air Force General, later admitted it was the largest single Patriot engagement in U.S. military history. It seemed that Iran notified the U.S. 12 hours prior to the attack to give them time to evacuate the base. Now, how do you interpret this advance notice? Does it somehow decrease the significance of Iran's response?
We must remember that Iran is one of the few countries in the world that maintains ethical conduct, even during wartime. Warning before an attack means we do not want civilians to be harmed, a principle deeply rooted in Iranian beliefs, and one that Israel clearly does not share. The casualty numbers in Gaza confirm this claim. Unlike Israel and the U.S., Iran has never used the element of surprise to harm its enemies. This reflects true strength and self-confidence. You're so sure of your power that you do not need deception or ambush. You tell the enemy, prepare yourself. I'm going to strike. The enemy prepares and still suffers heavy blows. Can there be any greater show of power than that?
By choosing precision over escalation and by issuing a warning, Iran signals strategic restraint without compromising resolve. Mr. Kazemi also underscored a key issue regarding Iran's geopolitical red lines, highlighting how recent developments may test Tehran's strategic boundaries.
There has always been an assumption that Iran, due to political considerations, would not attack U.S. bases in the Persian Gulf region, especially now that Tehran's relations with those countries have improved. The same applies to Qatar. Iran has long maintained warm relations with that country. However, the strike on Al Udeid in Qatar sent a clear message. If Iran perceives its national security to be at risk, it will not hesitate to cast aside political considerations, and it will do so without fear. While Qatar is considered a friendly nation to Iran, it also hosts a very dangerous American base that could pose a threat. When it comes to national security and the safety of its citizens, Iran makes no exceptions for any country, period.
Washington's initial silence wasn't just denial. It was damage control, trying to preserve the illusion of invulnerability in the face of a sanctioned adversary that had just punched through its defenses. For every government in the region hosting a U.S. military base, the message is unmistakable. If Iran's security is threatened, no outpost is out of reach. This was not just a retaliation. It was Iran's entry into a new era of active deterrence, delivered loud and clear through political, military, and narrative warfare. Al Udeid was not an isolated target. It was the culmination of a deliberate, calibrated escalation following Israeli attacks on Iranian facilities, after years of developing domestic missile technology and during a period when Iran was being pushed into a corner. We also spoke with Mohammad Bayat, a researcher focused on West Asia and international security affairs. Mr. Bayat provided valuable context by framing the current events within a broader historical narrative, helping to connect present-day tensions with long-standing regional patterns.
This base, through its radar systems, supports Israel's anti-missile systems in countering Iranian missile and drone attacks. The strike on Al Udeid demonstrated that Iran not only has comprehensive intelligence coverage of U.S. bases in the region, but also the will and capability to target them. By attacking this base, Iran effectively struck at America's eyes in the region. Another key point is that after the first and second Persian Gulf Wars, many Arab countries in the region believed that hosting a superpower like the U.S. would guarantee their security. But in practice, these bases have undermined that very security. Under normal circumstances, Iran would likely never have violated Qatari airspace. If the Al Udeid base hadn't been located in Qatar, and if not for America's adventurous behavior in the region, what reason would there have been for Iranian missiles to fly over Doha? In essence, what was meant to bring these countries security has instead exposed them to danger.
When Israel launched strikes on Iranian territory, Iran answered with hundreds of ballistic missiles and suicide drones, targeting Israeli military bases and even hitting Tel Aviv and Haifa. For the first time, Iran's arsenal was used en masse in open conflict, saturating the Iron Dome and other anti-missile systems and shaking the Israeli regime to the core. The Al Udeid strike then was the strategic echo, meant not just to punish, but to reshape the battlefield. And the ceasefire that followed, it cannot be understood without recognizing the role these missiles played in tipping the balance. It was a full and forceful stop to the U.S. adventurism in the region. It was ceasefire through strength, echoing Trump's remarks.
What message do you think Iran conveyed to the world and the U.S. Through its retaliatory strike against Al Udeid airbase in Qatar?
Iran has shown that it's the only country with the courage to strike the greatest superpower in modern history. Since World War II, no nation, not China, not Russia, not even North Korea, has dared to attack U.S. military bases. Only Iran has done so, not once, but twice. The first time was in response to the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani when Iran launched a missile strike on the U.S. Ain al-Assad base in Iraq. The second time is this recent strike on Al Udeid. Both times, Iran publicly claimed responsibility, and both times, the U.S. did not dare retaliate. It was as a result of this second strike that the U.S. agreed to a ceasefire, even pledging not to interfere with Iran's oil sales to China if Iran also agreed to accept the ceasefire.
Iran's missile didn't just destroy a dome. It pierced the illusion that U.S. bases are untouchable, that deterrence is a one-way street, that America can strike without consequence. This time, Iran answered, not with rhetoric, with fire, to the eye of the U.S. in the region.
Do you think that Operation Annunciation of Victory will be recorded in history and will be remembered by future generations?
Iran is a country that not so long ago suffered territorial losses due to weak central governments unable to stand up to Western powers. Through invasions and political pressure, large swaths of Iranian territory were taken, from Herat to Bahrain, from the Caucasus to parts of the Arvan River. Over the past 2 to 3 centuries, we've grown smaller and smaller. During World War II, despite having declared neutrality, Iran was occupied by major powers, leading to a devastating famine that killed millions. But that once weakened nation has now become a country that stands firm in the face of aggression. When it is struck, it hits back harder. Israel may have started this war, but in the end, it was the one pleading for a ceasefire. No major Israeli site was left untouched by Iran's retaliatory strikes. The Weizmann Institute, Tel Naf Air Base, the Haifa oil refinery, the Mossad headquarters, all were targeted. As for the Al Udeid strike, this is no small feat. To launch a successful, direct strike on the most powerful military force in history, I doubt that even countries like Russia or China would respond to a U.S. strike with such boldness and precision. Iran's attacks were direct, powerful, accurate, and successful. We've now reached this level of defensive capability, and we hope that future generations will only build further on Iran's national strength.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Until next time, take care.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وصلى الله على محمد وآل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين Brothers, sisters, listeners السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته And welcome to the program مفاتيح الحياة Keys of Life I am your host Abdullah Al-Musawi We were talking about the Islamic State or an Islamic system
or any system, first thing that we need to have in that system is a ruler. And we said that ruler has duties he needs to fulfill. And among the duties that a ruler needs to have, which we ended with yesterday, is that he needs to give people hope. And he needs to make sure people are saved in times of calamities and times of problems. And allow me to add something here. Maybe I forgot to mention in the previous episode in this regard. We have a ziyara Arba'een for Imam Hussein, on the 40th of Imam Hussein. There's a specific ziyara that shred in that day. We talk about Imam Hussein, we say, وَبَدَلَ مُحْجَتَهُ فِيكُ. Oh Allah, Imam Hussein, he gave his life for your sake. Why? لِيَسْتَنْقِذَ عِبَادِكَ مِنَ الْجَهَالَةِ وَحَيْرَةُ الضَّلَالَةِ. He gave his life to save your servants from ignorance and from being misguided and lost. So sometimes a leader comes to a stage where he needs to sacrifice himself for his own people, for their guidance. This is what Imam Hussein alayhi salam did. Moving on, the third duty in our list that a ruler and a leader needs to have is, in fact, to keep his doors open for people. They need to understand people, listen to people, understand their problems, understand their issues, work with them to help them make it better. That's the job that was given to them. You being a leader, not being a king. You are there to serve people. Imam Sadiq Salamullah Ali says, when a leader or a person who is in charge and he takes care of people and he becomes just and opens his doors to them and he removes the curtains, which is usually placed between the kings and people, and he looks into the affairs of people and takes care of their affairs and listens to them, he says Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on Day of Judgment will take care of that person, and he will not make him feel the fear of the Day of Judgment, and he will enter him and admits him to heaven. That's it. Do the opposite and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will throw that person in hellfire. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. Another duty the rulers and kings and whoever is in power needs to have is they need to work on themselves in terms of tazkiyah, purification, and in terms of cultivating the ethics and morals within themselves. That's a duty that they need to have, because when they stay away and far from that, then the system will collapse. Their egos will come into place. Their greed, their selfishness, they will become narcissistic in their approach, unless they work on themselves. Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says, "Man nasaba nafsahu lin-nasi imama." Whoever places himself as a leader to people, and mind you, brothers, sisters, we're not just talking about presidents and kings and rulers. This also concerns you and me. When we are placed in a group, in a family, because we begin with a family, right? And then we make it our way up. These are requirements even for you and me. So the Imam says, whoever places himself in a place of leadership for people, فَلْيَبْدَأْ بِتَعْلِيمِ نَفْسِهِ قَبْلَ تَعْلِيمِ غَيْرِهِ. Let him begin by teaching himself before he goes and teaches people. وَلْيَكُنْ تَأْدِيبُهُ بِسِيرَتِهِ قَبْلَ تَأْدِيبِهِ بِلِسَانَهِ. Let him teach people by his akhlaq, by his way of life, before he can teach them with his tongue. Which means that you need to apply and practice the Islamic laws that you already know. You let people see you practice these things. That's how people learn. Like children, when we were children, we would look at our parents, whatever they do, we mimic them, we copy them. And that's how we learned a lot of things in our lives. We have to do the same thing for people when we are in position of power. And he says, قَبْلَ تَأْدِيبِهِ بِلِسَانَهِ. Before you start using your tongue to teach people, وَمُعَلِّمُ نَفْسِهِ وَمُؤَدِّبُهَا. You have to become the teacher, the mentor of your nafs, of your soul, and the one that teaches it. Which means you constantly need to be teaching yourself. أحق بالإجلال من معلم الناس. Those who teach themselves and take care of themselves, so these should be honored more than normal teachers and those who educate people. So the idea is, when it comes to dealing with people and being in charge of people, you need to make sure that you constantly and always working on yourself, because tazkiyah is not a one-day job, it's a lifetime job. And therefore we see in chapter Shams, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala swears in surah Shams 11 times before he makes the following statement, قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنْ زَكَّاهَ وَقَدْ خَابَ مَنْ دَسَّاهَ. Successful is he who purifies it. Therefore there is a requirement on the leaders and rulers to constantly, daily, sometimes maybe every couple of hours, to check in with themselves, and they see that they're not ruling and being in charge of people for their own desires, rather for the betterment of the people around them. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children's cries.
There was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind, a momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time. Trees once swayed, many streets.
last whisper of the tales of lives untold, shattered dreams and broken homes, but heroes lay a fold of roses, where many streets that were once filled with stories old.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're tuned into your trusted companion on the airwaves, Iran Radio, broadcasting from the heart of Tehran. We're grateful you've chosen to spend part of your day with us. First up, it's time for news. Following the news, join us for Foresight. This program explores the practical dimensions of worship and servitude to Allah in confronting the challenges of modern life. Featuring lectures and speeches by renowned English-speaking scholars from the Islamic world, Foresight focuses on deepening understanding of devotion to God as a guiding principle for contemporary issues. Afterwards, we return with another segment of radio production. Coming up next, news. Please stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Afternoon headlines. The Iranian president hails the country's diplomatic efforts in rallying global condemnation of Israel's imposed war, calling it a major achievement. More death and destruction in Gaza as the Israeli regime presses ahead with its genocidal war on the besieged Palestinian territory. And protests have been held in several countries across the world to demand an end to Israeli genocidal campaign against Palestinians in Gaza.
Live from Tehran, I am Bahman Nourai, and this is News.
President Masoud Pezeshkian has praised Iran's diplomatic efforts in rallying global condemnation of Israel's imposed war as a major achievement for the country.
All international organizations, except the United Nations and the Security Council, condemned the Israeli regime's aggression against Iran. This achievement was not easily attained. It was achieved through sustained follow-ups, communications, and determined efforts. Today, Iran is recognized as a victim of aggression. Israel launched a war that was clearly in violation of all international laws, yet, regrettably, such actions are often justified by major powers in today's world.
Pezeshkian was speaking at a press conference with Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi after a meeting with foreign ministry staff and diplomats. He praised the country's tireless diplomatic efforts during the 12-day war. Pezeshkian referred to recent remarks by the leader of the Islamic Revolution on the vital role of diplomacy. He noted that Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei described diplomacy as a pillar of resistance against adversaries, with the military being the other. Earlier in the meeting, Araghchi hailed what he called excellent ties between Iran's administration and military, calling them a decisive factor in forcing Israel to seek an unconditional ceasefire. Araghchi also said Iran is working to document Israeli crimes during the war. In Tehran, a special tribute is paid homage to Lieutenant General Hossein Salami 40 days after his martyrdom. Senior officials and ordinary citizens were present to honor a military leader and national hero whose life embodied resistance and unity against foreign aggression. Yusumi Shahmadi has more in this report.
Under the shadow of black banners, Iranians from all walks of life gather to mark the 40th day since the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Hossein Salami. Revered as the former commander of the IRGC, Salami is remembered not only for his anti-imperialist stance, but also for shaping Iran's defense doctrine. The tribute echoes beyond political statements. The mourners recall how the country's military might force Israel to request a ceasefire.
The great thing he did was bring the nation closer. He knew how to promote unity, and that is key to defeating the enemy.
The ceremony draws a rare display of national unity, bringing together top military figures and prominent politicians.
Our duty is to continue the martyrs' path and make sure the next generation never forgets their memory. Following their footsteps strengthens the nation. The enemies underestimated Iran, but they were met with an iron fist.
The martyrs' path is the path of a strong Islamic Iran. The enemies thought we were weak, but now they know the truth. They've realized our strength, thanks to our martyrs.
Lieutenant General Hossein Salami's martyrdom has amplified his legacy. Stories of his humility, deep intellect, and strategic brilliance now echo more loudly. Mourners young and old see themselves as heirs to the Salami path, vowing to carry forward his mission. Amid ongoing threats, Iranians now see themselves as guardians of a cause championed by Salami in life and sealed by his martyrdom.
40 days after Lieutenant General Salami's martyrdom, Iranians have gathered to honor his leadership and resilience, vowing that his mission will continue to inspire their path forward for generations to come. Tehran.
It's been another bloody day for Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip as the Israeli military intensifies its attacks across the war-ravaged territory. Nearly 20 people were killed after Israeli forces opened fire on Palestinians near an aid distribution center in northern Gaza. A similar strike on Palestinian aid seekers in Khan Yunus, southern Gaza, left a dozen fatalities. The Israeli military also struck Gaza with fresh air and artillery strikes. At least 4 Palestinians were killed in an Israeli bombing of a residential building west of Gaza City. Also in western Gaza, the Israeli artillery shelled an apartment building in Ar-Rimal neighborhood, killing several Palestinians. Similar attacks targeting areas in Gaza's Ad-Daraj neighborhood also left several fatalities.
The U.S.-Israeli genocide, which began in October 2023, has so far killed nearly 59,000